In near silence, they could barely hear the armored wag coast along through the night and disappear. Brian grabbed Christy and jerked a thumb. She touched her ears and nodded, pointing in a specific direction. Moving fast, the companions grabbed their backpacks and got Jack loose, then slipped quietly out the belly hatch of the sideways LAV, putting it between them and the Hummer. Trying to buy his friend some yardage, Doc stayed behind, firing two Kalashnikovs in an alternate pattern to make it sound like several people were shooting back. Reaching a safe distance, they waited on a rill for Doc to tie off the trigger of a fully loaded AK-47 as a diversion, then exit the belly hatch to join them. JB tilted back his fedora with the barrel of a Uzi.
Now we'll see how smart the Blues are.
Only have to be curious. We'll do the rest.
100 yards away, the rigged Kalashnikov finally died, and silence ruled the starless night. On the horizon, even the terrible flames of the burning Vill began to slowly diminish.
Think they're aced?
A sec man paused on the ground. A blaster in each hand, Campbell rested his chin on a forearm and chewed over the possibility.
Maybe. Or they could be trying to lure us in closer for an ambush.
Keep going?
The hairs on his nape were going stiff. Campbell sensed a trap and crawled away from the toppled APC.
Back to the Hummer. We got some Willie Peter grins in the locker. We're gonna lay down a ring of flames that'll light the night. Then we can pick them off one at a time and save the Baron. They'll try to cut a deal at the end. We'll agree and shoot him in the back.
About fucking time.
As the handful of Sekmen crawled toward their wag, the single headlight switched on, bathing them in brilliant illumination. Dimly, Campbell could see the one-eyed man behind the wheel, holding his M79 Bren launcher. How had he found the wag in the pitch dark? It was impossible. Somebody worked a bolt, chambering around, and both sides started firing simultaneously. However, the companions were shrouded in blackness, protected by the armored body of the Hummer. The Blues were in the open on flat ground. The exchange was brief and permanent. Mildred checked to make sure Jack was okay in the rear of the wag. Some of his minor wounds had opened again, but the blood loss was minimal. She wiped his brow.
How are you feeling?
Blues dead?
Yes, they are.
The teenager gave a wan smile.
I'm fine.
JB, cover me.
Ryan walked toward the bodies. He found two still breathing and finished them off with headshots.
By the three Kennedys.
Doc moved to the other side of the Hummer for protection. Standing on a low rising hill was a dim figure faintly silhouetted by the dying fires of the Shiloh Vill. The person was carrying a long blaster of some kind.
Now you fuckers are mine!
Sheffield pressed the launch button on top of the law. Empty. It was empty? When had Ryan fired off the rocket? Frantically tossing away the tube, Sheffield sprinted for a nearby rill, planning to throw himself over the edge no matter what was on the other side. Holding the Sig Sauer in a steady two-handed grip, Ryan fired a full clip after the racing Baron. This wasn't the time for halfway measures. When Sheffield died, the danger of the kite was gone forever. The Baron stumbled over the uneven ground when a white-hot pain punched into his side. He fell to his knees, then rose again and continued for the rill. He had to quickly get out of the range of their blasters. But his blood was everywhere, and the man felt terribly cold. Cutting loose with the Uzi, JB angled high, trying for the running man. Christy fired at him with an AK-47, and Mildred did the same, but he was out of range for the blasters. Ryan unlimbered the Steyr and chambered around. The night split apart with a thunderous discharge, a foot-long lance of flame reaching out from the pitted maw of the Colt Python, held in the bloody hands of a grim-faced Jack Lauren. With a gaping hole in his shoulder, Baron Sheffield flew forward with his arms outstretched and hit the top of the rill. On the other side was a babbling river, water to hide in and wash his wounds. Escape was only feet away. Exhausted from the effort, Jack collapsed once more as the indomitable Baron rose again, clutching his stomach and shuffling for the crest of the rill. He was going to make it, going to live. His long frock coat billowing in the breeze, Doc cocked the hammer on his Lamar, which advanced the trigger a full half inch, then fired. Throwing flame and smoke, The hand cannon blasted a .44 caliber mini-ball straight into the Baron just as he reached the rill, blowing away most of his neck. The Steyr spoke twice, finishing the job, and Sheffield hit the ground hard, his head rolling freely away to splash into the dark waters. It's finished. Ryan rested the stock of his long blaster on a hip. Come on, let's see what's salvageable in the LAV. As the companions headed for the APC, Christie nudged Doc.
Good thing your blaster did a malfunk before. Sheffield would have chilled you for sure.
The Lamar is operating perfectly, my dear Christie.
Doc waved away the volumes of smoke pouring from the muzzle of his black powder weapon.
This is a single-action pistol. You must cock the hammer first, or it will not shoot, unlike your double-action revolver.
Sort of a double safety?
Exactly.
I didn't know that.
Christie mentally filed the information away. Doc smiled, displaying his oddly perfect teeth.
And most assuredly, neither did the good Baron.
Taking what they could from the battered APC, the companions filled the Hummer with ammo, MRE packs, and assorted supplies, then started the long drive back to the redoubt. There was a lot to tell Dean once they got back. As the door to the redoubt slid open, JB drove the Hummer along the anti-rad zigzagging tunnel and into the garage. Immediately, the companions piled out of the wag and charged across the floor. A dead woman lay near the stairwell door, surrounded by a pool of blood. Sprawled on top of her was Dean, his fist still clenched around his pocket knife, which was buried to the hilt in her left ear. Ryan rushed to his side.
Son, what happened?
Weakly, Dean looked upward, his eyes a blazing red in color. The irritation had to have been severely painful.
Stoop bitch didn't know the difference between a tear gas gren and a poison gas gren.
Ryan helped the boy to his feet.
Couldn't read the color codes, eh?
Guess not. I waited for her to come get me and jumped her.
On the bottom level?
Yeah.
And it ended all the way up here?
The boy nodded.
Hell of a fight.
Ryan gave a rare smile.
Expect no less of a Carter.
Smiling in appreciation, Dean then got a serious expression and walked over to Mildred.
Sorry, but she shot up your fancy med kit. It's all busted to pieces. Along with a lot of our other stuff.
Mildred tightened her lips to a thin line and closed her eyes for a minute. Then the physician opened them and sighed.
Better to lose the med kit than you. And some of the equipment should still be usable. I'll go check.
Coming with you.
The two went down the stairs, the door swinging closed behind them.
Wonder how she got inside.
Ryan spied a piece of paper covered with numbers sticking out of her pants pocket. Retrieving the sheet, he found it was filled with alphanumeric codes, most of them crossed out. At the top of the page was a heading, from the desk of Silas Jamivu.
Should have chewed you twice, you old bastard.
Ryan pulled out a butane lighter, set the papers on fire, then crushed the ash under his boot. Rummaging through the pockets of the dead woman's clothes for any further documentation, Doc got an idea and started to check the labels instead.
Let us take her clothes. We could only salvage Jack's camouflage jacket and vest. The boots and pants should be about the right size for him.
Save the bearskin for me afterward. I need a new coat, and that hide will do nicely once I cut and sew it some.
JB and Mildred returned just then with their arms full of supplies, and the companions got busy relaying the goods to the Matran's chamber. The consensus was that they wanted out of this particular redoubt as soon as possible. Hopefully, the next would be completely deserted, and they could spend a few days resting and letting Jack heal. Within the hour, they were ready to go. The friends climbed into the chamber, and Ryan closed the door. He sat quickly and impatiently waited for the electronic mists to take them someplace, anyplace, far, far away from war-torn Tennessee. Dawn was beginning to break on the Pennsylvania mountains when the exhausted Barb decided to break his stance. Lowering his lance, the naked outlander waited for the reaction of the strange male in the blue shirt. For 2 days they had faced each other poised to chill, but neither struck first. After so long a period, the barb could only grant a warrior's boon to the blue shirt. He offered peace, hopefully.